A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The light's probably gone.
So had the stairs.
You are just number six.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to episode 6 of British Invaders, the podcast all about British science fiction television. And this is the second half of our discussion of Box of Delights, a fantasy children's program from the mid-1980s that was an adaptation of the novel by John Masefield. This is Brian from Canada.
And I'm Xander from England. The BBC have a long tradition of adapting classic children's literature, and quite often they show them on Sunday afternoons, and they're still doing this now. Outside the Box of Delights, the probably most famous example, at least in the UK, is the Narnia books, which I think the BBC did adaptations of in, I think again it was in the 1980s.
It started in the late 1980s and they kept going into the 90s, I think.
That's right, yeah, I think you're right. They did the first one, The Lion, The Witch and the Wardrobe, and they also did Prince Caspian and The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, I believe. But anyway, they did a series of them with the same actors and actresses. And so they, as I said, they had a tradition of doing these adaptations. The other examples, I guess, are the books of E. Nesbitt. And I think the BBC are pretty good at doing these, and they, although they are definitely aimed at children, and these are children's books, they are sort of put into a similar slot on a Sunday that Doctor Who would fill on a Saturday. So it's sort of bridging between the time when children are watching TV and when adults are watching TV, and it sort of definitely are family programmes, and they are, because they're well done, they sort of can appeal to an adult audience as well.
I think one of the things that sets the BBC adaptations apart from some others is the amount of respect that they had for the original literature. They really tended to be very faithful to the original novels in certainly most cases, if not almost all cases. And they really took the literature the way it was presented very much to heart. They would adapt things, but they would do it in a particular way that kept the feeling of children's literature. And it very much felt like a dramatized form of children's literature, not like a film or a TV program that just happened to be based on some book that was written at some point, and maybe they used some of it and did some other things for other parts to fill the gaps in. It was really done so they were very faithful not only to what was in the original books, but also to the style of children's literature and the way that storytelling was done in them.
They tend to almost always set the story in the same time period which it was set, which is usually when it was written. So, as we discussed last week, the book Box of Delights was written in 1935 and set in 1935, and the BBC adaptation was set in 1935, and that's the same with the Narnia books as well. They're set in the time at which they were the same as they originally were written. And as we discussed, the BBC is very good at doing these period dramas, getting the costumes right, getting the dress right, getting the cars right, the buildings, things like that.
Yeah, and also doing things like the dialogue in that style to reflect the time and to reflect how things were done in the original literature, which was something that was very nice, that was also well done. Something else that they used that we have alluded to but haven't gone into in detail is the format of doing things as serials, where often in more recent programs, adaptations of books are often done as a TV movie or one piece, where these were usually done as serials. In the case of Box of Delights, it was shown as 6 30-minute serials. And fortunately, in this case, they kept it that way on the DVDs, that you have the original 6 30-minute episodes and can watch it in those pieces. I felt that worked very well, both in the case of Box of Delights and in the case of many of the other programs that they did. It was a nice format to use. Box of Delights is available on DVD. Unfortunately, it is only available as a Region 2 or Region 2 and Region 4 DVD for England and Europe. It is not available as a Region 1 DVD. It has been shown in the US. It was shown on PBS, I believe, a few times during the 80s, but it has quite a low profile in the US. Other than those few airings, it has never shown up on video or DVD. But there is the Region 2 release, which is available in the UK and is also available from importers. And they did quite a good job on the DVD. It has some retrospective interview documentary information done some 20 years after the original miniseries was, and it has some of the original programs that we're talking about it.
There are 3 things you must know about this box.
Mr. Hollings, don't you think perhaps your magic is fading?
You open it like this. If you push this to the right, you can go small. If you press it to the left, you can go swift.
Here we talk about what we like and dislike about the show we're discussing. As discussed earlier, I think the basic story is a good one. It's a very good classic kids' book and well translated into a TV adaptation. I think the use of what were at the time innovative special effects works very well and stands up quite well today. And also the use of animation is very clever.
I would agree with most of that. The word classic is definitely one that applies here, not in a sense that this is a classic, which in many ways it is, but the style that's used in the story, I imagine in the book, and certainly in the TV miniseries version, has a very classic feel to it. It is timeless in certain ways in that it's set in 1935, but it isn't really dated to the 80s in that many ways. In some ways, the effects are dated, but it holds up pretty well. Box of Delights fits very well into the mold of a good classic children's Christmas story. So if you're looking for something that is a good Christmas story, something that's good for children and adults together, this works really well. It fills that role that was set for it really quite well. And in fact, when it was originally made, it was aired in the several weeks approaching Christmas, and it was initially intended just to be a children's series, but in fact it got a lot of a full family, adults and children together type of audience. It was more than just appealing to children. It was appealing to adults, although mostly adults watching with their children. But it had more appeal to adults than even the producers had initially expected.
One thing that might be worth pointing out is that if your readers are more modern British children's fiction, there are certain themes that seem to be common. So if you're a Harry Potter fan, I think some of the themes and elements used in the stories are familiar.
Yes, I think that's quite true. And it is also a good example of an older style of story presentation that is classic in that way that we described, but it also shows a somewhat slower pace of storytelling, and it shows effects that are not quite the way they are now. They're more primitive in some ways, but also in some ways they're more stylistic. So you have things like the animation, and even the other effects are used in a stylized way that is not always intended to be realistic. And that is something that I don't think we have that much of now, and it's nice to see how that's used in this. And it makes it something that would be good if you're looking for that type of thing to show to your children, something that is not like the things that are being done now, something that is a little bit more classic, is a little bit more like storytelling and children's literature and has that older type of feel to it, but is not as directly dated as some things are.
I think the only thing for me falls down, in my eyes at least, is the treatment of the animal characters. The rat that Brian mentioned earlier, then there's also a mouse, which seem to have very pantomime-ish costumes. Now, I guess, of course, those things are much more difficult to do in a realistic fashion. And in fact, in the book, if I remember, it's not really made clear whether the rat is a rat, i.e. a normal-sized rat, or whether it is a person that looks like a rat, which is the way it's portrayed in the TV series. They made an artistic choice on how to handle it, and I think it's the best way they could do it with what was available at the time. I think that's the only bit where it sort of grates a little bit.
I think that's about right. Now, we have talked very positively about a lot of the story aspects and the acting and presentation, and on the whole, it was very good. But for me, there was one real disappointment, and that was how the final episode, both the ending and the entire last episode, were handled. Some of the characters, Abner Brown in particular, were not as interesting and were a little bit more wooden in that last episode. It was not as interesting in the storytelling way as the others were. And in particular, at the end of it, there was a climax sequence, which was not bad. And then there was a sequence that occurred after the main climax, after the villain was no longer part of the story. There was this sequence where the characters basically needed to get to the Christmas Eve service. And there was sort of this somewhat strange and awkward way in which this was done with the Box of Delights and with Hearn the Hunter and various other characters being involved and this huge parade in order to get to this Christmas service in time for midnight. And I felt that was rather excessive. It didn't seem to add a lot to the story and was just quite a bit of a letdown at the end that didn't feel like it had much purpose and it didn't go anywhere. That was something that I thought was a little disappointing. Aside from some of those things in the final episode, I thought on storytelling and on dramatics, this was very strong. That was something where I really thought it did get quite a bit weaker than it was earlier on.
I think that was in the book. I suppose the sort of point is that the Abner's been trying to stop the Christmas service happening out of spite more than anything else, as far as you can tell. And it sort of was resolution of that plot. But as you say, I think it was stretching the ability of the effects. Maybe they should have just jumped from the sort of denouement of the baddies to them getting to the service on time without having to portray it, because they knew they couldn't portray it very well with the effects available at the budget they had at the time.
Perhaps. I think they just spent too much time on that was part of it, that it was quite an extended sequence that didn't add very much to it and was very sort of static in terms of story. So that was a little bit too bad that they did that way, I thought.
Yeah.
It also involved one of the characters that we did not mention earlier, a bishop. And Cole Hollings talks with the bishop earlier and refers to pagan times and makes some references that sort of confuse and confound this bishop. And he's clearly uncomfortable and dissatisfied with even the mention of that type of thing. And then all of a sudden at the end, the bishop is perfectly happy to have this magic box and then Hearn the Hunter help him get to the church in order to perform this midnight Christmas service. So that seemed a little odd that I thought that moment near the beginning was played very well. And then what happened at the end seemed to not fit with that and be a little weaker in how it was done.
The wolves are running. Perhaps you will do something to stop that bite.
One of the themes that is in the story is of wolves and that the baddies are called wolves. I think quite early on in the first episode, Cole Hollings says to Kay that the wolves are running, and this is sort of, certainly through the first few episodes, it's the sort of a theme. And in fact, the baddies are sort of seen to transform from humans into wolves at one point. And this is actually done quite cleverly, that they're walking off into the distance, and then there's a sort of cut to the person watching them, and then they cut back to wolves running off into the distance. I guess they're probably actually dogs, but I think it's quite cleverly done, because doing a proper transformation, would, again, on the sort of budget and effects they had at the time would be impossible, but I thought that was quite well done.
Yes, moments like that with the two people and then the two wolves added to the sense of mystery in it. There was sort of a current of these mysterious things that you're seeing things from Kay Harker's point of view, and he doesn't understand all of what is going on. It gave you a sense of mystery with all of these types of things that worked quite well.
Yeah.
There were a number of moments in Box of Delights that were very well set up and very memorable. Some of the first points where they were using animation, there is a scene that goes into this fantasy forest world with Kay Harker and Hearn the Hunter changing from one form to another, from people to stags to birds to fish and so on. It was very well done, and there were a number of these very clever moments that came up throughout the program. It was really quite well done, and it had a lot of moments that were really very enjoyable.
The good definitely outweighs the bad.
Okay, so just to wrap things up, The Box of Delights was a TV miniseries from the mid-1980s that was about a young boy called Kay Harker who encounters an older man called Cole Hollings who gives him the Box of Delights, a magical box that allows for all kinds of possibilities, and they must defeat Abner Brown, the villain, and other villains and other good guys are involved. And a fantasy adventure of a very classic style ensues.
The Box of Delights is a dramatization of a classic children's literature novel by Don Masefield that was written in 1935, and the story is set in 1935.
And now for our recommendations, or our ratings, if you will. I will say that I liked Box of Delights, and I will recommend it to certainly to people who enjoy children's television or who want a Christmas television program to show to their children, and especially if you like older style things. It's worth watching. It's a fun show. It has a few weak points here and there, but overall, it was well done. It's a fun show. It's worth seeing.
Yeah, I think if, much the same as Brian, I think if you're fan or your kids are fans of Harry Potter or the Narnia stories in particular, then I think they will also enjoy this because they are similar in parts.
If you want a taste of Harry Potter with a taste of 1935 literature and a taste of how British TV was done 20 years ago, then this is it. You get something pretty interesting. You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.BritishInvaders.com. Our next episode will cover Quatermass, the classic TV series that aired on both the BBC and later ITV, and we may talk about the Hammer Horror film remakes as well, but we will be focusing on that original TV series that was in the 50s and then came back in the 70s for a while as well. Thank you for joining us for this episode, and this is Brian saying goodbye.
Until next time, goodbye from me, Xander.